One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
I've thought about every disability I could get, and I think about the version of what I'd do if I had that condition. I thought, like, what if I go to prison? What if I go to, what if I lose, like, my lower half? What if I don't know, what if I, like, can't grow hair anymore?
For years, y'all have been asking for Anthony to be the one getting interviewed. Well, in this episode of Assumptions, we sit him down with other OG YouTubers. Now let's get into it. OG YouTubers felt pigeonholed into one form of content.
I think that's actually true.
For you?
For me, I mean, I feel like at the time, it was super risky to take risks. It's like one risk pushing it too far might turn your audience away. It felt like YouTube was really fragile and the audience was a little fickle at the time. But I think that was just a feeling. I think, you know, experimenting with other types of things, people did appreciate that. And I think it was just like a fear or something of like, if I change things up too much, then people might stop watching.
I tried a lot. I tried being a vlog channel before my channel blew up. I tried being a lot of different types of a channel, but it wasn't until I started doing just what I really loved. I loved playing the character. Playing characters is one of my favorite things to do. I would do it if I was on another planet. I would find a way to like play other characters and film it. So when I just kind of gave in and really started doing what I authentically love, that's what started blowing up. And yeah. It was almost like people I felt could sense that this is coming from a more genuine part of me than just like me trying to vlog a life that I wasn't living. Because I would never vlog my actual boring life. So it was just this false, you know, and I was like, no one's gonna watch that. But then I started playing these fictitious characters, and in a way, it's like I just appealed to more people with the mask on. And I think I've always kind of liked that version of storytelling long before YouTube existed.
It's weird because especially when I was first starting out, I did not feel pigeonholed at all because I had my personal channel, Danebow, and I was just doing whatever kind of random stuff I wanted to. It was a lot of like sketch, you know, like very cheesy special effects. That was my favorite thing in the world. And every, you know, couple weeks I would just do something random and new, and that was fun and exciting, but I didn't really have any kind of direction. So like some things would do pretty well and then some things would just fall flat, and I never had a true direction until I made Annoying Orange, and then that kind of blew up and became its own
kind
thing.
Kind of blew up?
Okay.
Doesn't that episode have like 250 million views? Yeah.
All right, it blew up.
Creating content now just feels like a chore for OG YouTubers.
I think it can.
Yes.
I think if you don't switch it up, if you get stuck in routine and cycle, kind of like you're just producing the same stuff over and over and over again without taking any risks or changing it. And yeah. especially if your goal is only like, I gotta hit my number, gotta hit my benchmark. But I think after a certain point, OG YouTubers have learned after being on the platform for so long that you kind of have to switch things up. You can't get so caught up in just making stuff in order to hit a number.
Yeah, you have gotta to make it for yourself.
You have to. And I feel like a lot of us have went through a portion of time where we were super burnt out just making it because we felt like we had to.
Yeah.
I don't know, have you dealt with that?
Well, you know, it's funny. We did an interview years ago where we talked about this with Ryan Higa, I think. Yeah. And that interview, Anthony, has haunted me.
Wait, why?
Ever since, because I kept thinking to myself, well, if it happened to him, when's it gonna happen to me?
Yeah, because Ryan Higa, he's like, I am just so fucking burnt out.
It horrified me. I had a hard time watching his coverage for the, just because I'm terrified of the same thing. Here's the thing. I have not been burnt out of it yet. I have not felt burnt out. My fans, ever since the dawn of my channel, I've never created I've never had a set routine upload schedule.
Yeah.
And I've been blessed in that sense of like, I've never set the stipulation of like, all right, every week you're getting content. But maybe that's the balance, is that I don't have that pressure of getting stuff out as much, so I don't fall out of love with it as much. But I still keep waiting for the day. I still keep waiting for the day it's gonna happen.
I know for myself, like when each time I do a new video, I try and do some kind of like new element or like new effect or something that I haven't done before, just to kind of keep teaching myself new things and keep it interesting. I think that's the biggest thing, you know, because that's the aspect I still love about it.
What's some of the weirdest stuff you've brought to life? I have to.
Like the weirdest objects?
Yeah, like some of the weirdest things you gave eyes to.
Oh man, any piece of food that you can think of, we've probably done.
Is it all edible stuff or are there?
No, I mean like there's water towers and whatever.
A water tower episode?
Yes, yeah.
Oh my God.
But also it's just dependent on the episode. Like, you know, characters could be eating a bag of chips, but then there's also a bag of chips that is a character in the same scene.
Eating the brains out of
it. Yeah, exactly.
It's crazy, because even just now sitting across from you, looking into your eyes, I'm like, those are the eyes. Like, I can see it. I'm like,
this is the mouth.
For me, it's the teeth. Yeah, yeah. I'm like, those are
crazy.
The most famous mouth on YouTube.
Yeah. Well, I mean, your face is strangely uniquely iconic to the world.
I'll take it.
It is crazy. I'm like now seeing the orange start to come out, and I'm like, saying, oh yeah, okay, there it is.
Change of hue.
Yeah, slowly the voice will seep in.
Right.
Starts laughing like annoying orange.
Oh my God.
Power of Jake Rock says that OG YouTubers regret pushing themselves as hard as they did at their YouTube peak.
I don't regret pushing myself so hard. I have learned from that you don't need to push yourself so hard in order to remain successful or to keep up momentum. I had a fear at that time that if I pulled back in any way, then I would lose it all.
I was gonna say, I had all six cylinders going and I knew it was sink or swim. I knew when I was popping off, okay, just we gotta put back all, this is priority number one. I gotta make sure, because you don't know if you're gonna have that wave of success again.
Yeah.
So I exhausted myself. I didn't sleep. I didn't, for like a good 5 months, I was just cranking out content.
But you don't regret it.
I don't regret it, because I probably wouldn't be sitting here now if I didn't do that. What was it like when you knew that you were popping off, was it like a sink or swim kind of moment for you too, or?
Yeah, definitely. I very much realized pretty quickly, just based on watching other people's stuff, that man, you really have to stick to a schedule.
Yeah.
And that for Orange, I kind of like, in the beginning, I was like, every Friday, that's when a new episode was gonna drop. And so that's, you know, I dedicated myself to that. And I think, you know, in the long run, that's what made it successful. But there was a lot, like you said, a lot of sleepless nights, a lot of, you know, not sleeping. Finishing videos at Thursday night at 4 a.m. right before upload, you know, that sort of thing. So
I think the thing is that we learned how much effort needs to go into creating the stuff that we create, but now we've learned to work smarter, not harder.
Yes.
And for me personally, it's like hiring the team to help get those things done, teaching people how to do a lot of the elements that someone else could probably do better than I can and more efficiently than I can, and having them do those elements so I get to focus on the things that I feel like only I could do or just that I love doing. and still create stuff at the same momentum as before, but without killing myself to do it.
Brandon has a top secret basement full of starved writers and producers that he sucks the energy juices out of to make such amazing content all the time.
Uh-oh.
I would like to know how they found this out. I wish I wouldn't be so lonely.
Because you'd be so busy sucking their
sucking
souls.
Sucking the starving,
with the juices.
All these skinny, withered legends down in my basement. I love doing it. Oh, I have no life. I guess those are all the demons in my basement. They're all just like the boring nights I've had. But everyone I look up to stays in. It doesn't have any FOMO about really staying in on most Friday or Saturday nights and just doing what they need to get done. I think there's a lot of something to admire with just staying in and being all of the soul-sucked the orphans. Was it what?
We've moved on to orphans now.
Orphans now. Very talented orphans.
You've orphaned them.
Oh my God.
I assume that Dane is truly embracing their identity and feeling much more free, fulfilled, and more joy than they have in a while.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. It's been like 8 or 9 years since I've actually been in front of the camera and done interviews. And a big part of that was just, I was not comfortable with myself. And I was just going through so much stuff personally. I mean, a big part of the reason that I got into making videos was to distract myself from my identity.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
You know, like I've come out as trans to some of my, you know, more intimate family, friends, that sort of thing. I've been on estrogen for 1.5 years now. I'm still very much in the early stages of everything, and I don't know where it's going to take me, but I know that it's right for me. Mm. But I spent so much of my time trying to distract myself from all of that, and that's why I loved making videos, because I could create this whole world and distract myself. And in this world, I can control everything, and I don't have to worry about it. But it's kind of nice now, as I've done a lot of therapy. Yeah. And I've found a way to love myself in a way that I never have before. And it's kind of nice now to be able to create stuff just for the fun of it. And it's not a distraction anymore.
Do you think the orange is ever going to transition?
Oh, yeah. Is orange gendered? Is it he?
Okay. So, I mean, this has been a big topic of conversation with the fans for a very long time. But Marshmallow, is a character who was kind of like the Pat character in Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Are they a boy? Are they a girl?
Right.
And we finally settled it a couple years ago. We made an episode where Marshmallow comes out as non-binary. And to some degree, it was a little bit of a reflection of my own coming out. I've kind of realized, hey, I've got this platform. I want people to know. And I just want people to know it's okay. Mm-hmm. You know?
So you've answered Marshmallow, but Orange.
Orange. Orange is definitely like heteronormative. I don't, you know, like he has a crush on passion fruit, but he doesn't really think about romance that much. I think he just doesn't know how to process his feelings in that way, which is why he makes a lot of like inappropriate jokes. Mm. And he thinks he's being funny, but he doesn't realize that everyone around him doesn't think he's funny.
I assume that at some point, OG YouTubers considered retiring.
Yes, absolutely. There was many conversations I had with big wigs about selling Annoying Orange. Oh. But it was definitely at a low point, when there was a lot of things going wrong in my career, my personal life, and I was just so overwhelmed. I was like, I just got to do something. And I, you know, went and talked to people about it. But at the end of the day, I kind of came back around and I was like, you know what? I can't. This is my baby. You know, I love it. So
how close were you to making that decision?
Not very close.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not very close.
But yeah, I mean, it's still tantalizing. I mean, it's still like, oh, there's someone who, there's an option to sell this. And it's rare that anyone has the privilege of loving what they do or that much, you know, especially something that we spend so much time on this stuff. I can't imagine not fully loving it, you know?
Right.
I feel like you're never going to retire.
No.
No.
No, I thought.
What
I've
would you do
about,
with yourself?
I've thought about every disability I could get. Like, what if I lose a leg? What if I lose this? Go blind, go deaf, ding, ding, ding. And I think about the version of what I'd do if I had that condition.
Right, love right. It. Like, you'll be able to continue creating content no matter what.
I thought, like, what if I go to prison? What if I get a, what if I lose, like, my lower half? What if I don't know, what if I, like, can't grow hair anymore? And whatever, I'm in wigs all the time. I think about it because I don't like, you know, you have certain professions, like, let's say, a brain surgeon, you know, you break your hands, you're fucked. Right.
True. Yeah. Yeah.
It's scary to think that, like, oh, I could fall out of love with this or stop doing this because of any reason. I'm never going to retire, but I am scared of something preventing me from doing what I love. And I don't think anything can. I have to be pretty fucking dead to stop doing this.
The only way you're not doing it is if you're in a coma or dead.
I just love it.
And even then, we'll step in. And we'll do the filming.
I hope you do.
Yes.
It'll just be shots of your body in a coma. People will love it. I've never thought about actually retiring in the moment, but I have fantasized about a future where I retire. And I don't know if I'll ever actually get there. But even selling Smosh in 2011, it was like with the idea of like, oh, when I'm like super old, like in my like 36 years old, I'll be able to retire. That's probably
young.
When I'll want it. But now I'm here and I see like, I just love doing this. I love making things. I love creating things. I love seeing the way that it impacts people. I love seeing the positive effect that you can have just through this little screen, and it can affect potentially millions of people in a positive way. I just enjoy it. I love it
so much. Yeah, I was gonna say, you're not gonna, see you retiring.
I don't know.
Hey, I got a question for you guys. How old were you guys when you like started to pop off on YouTube?
Oh, that's a good one.
18.
Wow, you were a baby.
Literally half.
You waited until it was legal.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah, that was in 06, 07,
that was
05.
Yeah. Wow. I just turned 18 and the Pokemon lip sync video popped off. It got on the front page of YouTube. And
that's wild. Like, I think about it, because I was around 30 when things really started taking off for me. And I can't imagine, you know, coming out of my teens and just not knowing anything about myself and still figuring myself out, and then that happens.
It was strange navigating, you know, having all these comments and people telling you what they think about you.
Yeah.
And you're so vulnerable at 18, right? Oh, and every opinion matters. So that was something I had to like very quickly learn how to not take to heart. Mm-hmm. But luckily most women just call me emo or homophobic slurs. So I was like, okay.
You did get a lot of homophobic slurs.
Oh, for sure.
Ian, not as much. You got a lot.
Oh, I got a lot more. He got some too.
He did.
Yeah.
But everyone's like, but Anthony's the gay one.
If there's a gay one between them, it's Anthony.
Op Doc, they say, I assume the annoying orange person has been making those videos as a requirement for a deal they took, or they signed the rights away to it.
Ooh. Wow, that's brutal.
That is brutal. That implies a lot without saying
much.
Yeah,
that's, I don't know. That comes from a very angry place.
Yeah, who are they?
Op
Doc.
It's a Doc Ock.
I'm sorry you feel that way. But no, I mean, absolutely not. I do it because I actually like doing it.
Well, you had the cartoon, and then there was a time when you had all the toys and Halloween costumes and stuff. Maybe it comes from a place of just seeing just how much stuff was made at certain times.
Sure. I mean, there's always going to be people that are like, you sold out, you did a TV show, and you know, that sort of thing. But kind of to go back to what I was saying earlier about, like, I went to school to be in film, and I, you know, like, before then, I didn't even know, like, this was a career. Mm-hmm. Like, I could make videos for a living? Holy crap. And so once things took off on YouTube and, you know, Orange took off, I really saw that as an opportunity. Like, hey, this is something that I love doing and I'm gonna chase that. And, you know, 14, 15 years later, it's still going, which is crazy in internet years. Like, talk about like longevity for the three of us. Holy crap. That is so long.
I think
to
it's
be
incredible
doing this.
That you could keep that series going with enough life in it for so long, and it's attracted hundreds of thousands of people to come back and watch every single episode. I think that's amazing.
We can put faces on anything. Name something you want a face on. I can do it.
Obama-shaped dildo.
Obama-shaped dildo.
We got it. We can do it.
All right.
Yeah. That'll be Orange After Dark.
Yeah. Ooh, you know there's an appetite for that.
Yes, there is. We'll do an OnlyFans.
Okay. Oh, I meant, yeah. This is a perfect set. My brother said, because I said, do you have any question, like any questions you want me to ask? Mm. And he says, he remembers seeing Annoying Orange, Rule 34, or is it 37?
34.
34. Like basically being an annoying fleshlight. Like, and he's a, is that, is that, I didn't, I've never
there,
seen.
I mean, there's an appetite for anything out there. I do not doubt it.
The Annoying Fleshlight?
Oh God, I can't even. Hey! Hey!
I don't know, but it's out there.
You would think nothing would kill a boner faster.
Because they're so acidic.
I was thinking because it's annoying. It's just...
Well, I mean, it's not annoying when you're doing what he described.
Brandon Rogers is actually an asshole in real life.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's people are just going to have to learn to live with it. There's a sign in front of all my meet and greets that just says sorry. And then as they leave, there's an array of Band-Aids, medications, all kinds of, there's ointments and stuff to heal the red marks that they walk out of there with. No, I abuse my fans. Not verbally, physically.
You're not a maniac.
Right. It's not full-on assault
either. You don't
hurt
their feelings.
And if they don't like it... Then, that's what therapy's for.
Dane must be on drugs most of the time to create the annoying orange.
I love how it's most of the time.
Most of the time.
Sober.
No, I mean, like this, it's definitely not. When I came up with orange, it was completely sober. Apparently, this is just how I process trauma. I don't know, putting faces on things. No.
You said people have come up to you?
Yeah, I've had people come up to me and they're like, seriously though, you were stoned, right?
I always assumed they overworked themselves and never really had time for anything else.
I mean
that's not wrong.
Definitely true for a certain portion of time.
Yeah.
You have to unlearn your hardworking tendencies, especially because that kind of stuff is rewarded. You're like, oh, I've been working 60 hours a week. People are like, oh, good for you. People, I think it's just looked highly upon to overwork yourself. Yeah. So you kind of have to unlearn that.
Plus when your stuff is popping, like it's so exciting and you can't wait to actually like stay awake and keep making stuff and you see the results of your work. And it's like, yes. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it can be addicting for sure. It's hard to know when I'm like working and enjoying it and working and then like harming myself by not sleeping and working, because I get sucked into it.
Mm-hmm.
And next thing you know, I have a day's worth of piss in me. And it's crazy.
And it's not yours. I don't know how it got there, but
I don't know how it got there. Someone found their way to my urethra.
So that's got
to
be the quote of the day. It's, come on.
I assume OG YouTubers cringe at their old content.
Who doesn't, though? I mean, the whole point of being an artist is to progress, you know, year after year. There's a few gems I look back on and I go, damn, that was good. But I don't know. What do you...
I don't know. I think there was definitely a portion of time where I was like, oh, that's cringy. But now I look back on it and I'm like... I think I'm just more proud of how I started, how I was doing these things, being creative, making these decisions, taking risks when I was 17, 18 years old. I think it's really cool to look back and see the evolution. I don't cringe about it, really.
Good. Yeah. I think that's important because it's all an evolution. It's all learning. And I think when I look back at my early stuff, that's what I think, too. It might be primitive, but you know what? I was learning.
Yeah.
And in its own way, there's value in it.
I think as we get older and the further we distance ourselves from those early, you know, we were just learning, you know, how to make videos, that era, I think we will, like, we get more forgiving to it.
Because
that's, you know, that's when we first started. Whereas, you know, maybe like 10 years after the fact, it's like, ugh, like we're too close to it. And it's kind of like, I'm not that. But you're right. There's kind of a magic to when we were first fall, because you're watching yourself fall in love, and we're lucky enough to have had it on camera. You know, when you love your work, I mean, not everyone is lucky enough to have video evidence through years and decades of content.
I assume that speaking to strangers is a weird thing to do now, because that stranger could know much more about them from the start than they do.
I mean, it definitely crosses my mind if someone speaks to me or reacts to my presence in a specific way. And I can't necessarily describe it, but there's like a certain look that they do or a certain thing that their mouth kind of does. Like, they just know who you are. They're like, there's like a little tiny smirk that happens. And then it's usually like at the end of the interaction, they'll mention it. And it's always weird when it's like a handyman working in my bedroom, fixing something in there for me. And then they're like, oh, by the way, I grew up watching all your videos, love it. And I'm like, oh.
Yes.
And luckily, they've never been a creepy person, but there's so many there's so many creepy people out there.
Dude, I don't know how many times I've had workers come over and do the same thing. They'll see like the plaques on, the buttons on the wall, and they'll be like, wait, annoying? Oh my gosh.
I recognize that mouth.
Yep, and then they want to talk for like, a half hour about their childhood and stuff like that. It's fun.
Yeah.
I no one's recognized me at all. No, I've had a couple Uber Eats drivers be like, No. I'm at a friend's
house. They're writing down your address real quick.
I don't live. I'm just fucking this person. I don't know who would live in this shithole. Not me. But I'm always met with love, at least. I will say though, the look in public when they see me and they recognize me, and I've had many chats about this with my therapist. I assume immediately that they don't like me. I assume that they're thinking homophobic thoughts, or they're thinking like they're thinking about what I look like or what I am. Oh, this person is like judging me. And then it's almost always that they recognize me. But when I see them looking at me, I'm like, it's also a similar look to they're checking you out a little bit, because it's like a prolonged.
So it's either they're homophobic, mm-hmm. they're attracted to you, or they know your content.
They're homophobic, they're hateful, they're racist, they love me, want to suck me. It is a weird look though, because it's not natural.
When they're all that same person, that's the real weird part.
Then you know you got a good video on hand. Go back to vlogging.
I assume that they all feel like they have to constantly change what they do to fit themselves into a new category, to constantly fit with what's popular at the time.
I feel like what we make is pretty timeless. You can watch it at any time period. It's not like we really. I mean, well, you'll do parody. I mean, well, we've all done parody.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I guess we ran into this recently when Ian and I were writing like a fake commercial to advertise a fake product, mm-hmm. and our go-to in the past would have been like an infomercial parody. But that's you don't see infomercials, so it's not really like in the zeitgeist. So we took a different approach, and we were like, oh, it's going to be like a medication or drug ad commercial parody instead. Like, so we've definitely had to flip some of the ideas that we would have done before and be like, what's the modern take on it?
Yeah.
But I don't really feel the pressure to like keep up with the like what's trendy now, because I feel like that just falls out of trend.
YouTubers can't be professional actors.
I have had problems getting cast and stuff, specifically because by definition, I am an influencer.
They're like, you're not to be taken seriously.
Right, let alone the fact that like really what I am is I'm a filmmaker, I'm a comedian, I'm a writer, I'm an actor, but because the medium in which we're all on is, it's YouTube,
taken as seriously.
Right, and then whereas during the Fred, the Fred movie, the Smosh, there was a time when like, oh, you are an influencer, here's a ton of money, make a, and even I had a show called Magic Funhouse, and that was on full screen when they had a, like, there was a time when being an influencer was like a moneymaker.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like, oh yeah, this movie's casting, but they didn't want a face that people would recognize because they would just see the influencer, or they would just see, it's not we're not wanting to take away from the story, or they want, I don't know, I've had a million reasons why, like, nah, but you're an influencer, so we're not going to give you the part. So it has people, especially people back home, they assume, oh yeah, you're famous on the internet. You must have no problem getting a role in a show or something. And I audition all the time. I have probably more trouble now than before I was super big.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yeah, there was a long period of time where I was really wanting to be an actor in traditional things. I think it was out of a little bit of fear of like, what happens if YouTube fails? What happens if Smosh fails? But now I don't feel that as much. I'm perfectly happy making stuff on YouTube, on the internet, and that's okay. I feel like for a long period of time, it was like, ooh, okay, but you know, this is just a stepping stone to go to traditional media. You better go to traditional media. That's the goal.
She Be Here assumes that OG YouTubers are so restricted by how suffocating audiences can be.
I haven't felt that personally.
The only thing that I can think of for myself anyways is with Orange, there's kind of a natural evolution of, you know, watching the first episode, it's very short, very simple. But then as time goes on, you want to introduce characters and backstories and things like that. And I, for, you know, some of my audience is like, hey, we really want you to go back and do what you did before. And then when you do that, then the other half of the audience is like, we want you to do new stuff.
Yeah, you start creating like factions among your own fan base. And that's just the natural evolution of growing a fan base. You're going to start growing people with different opinions.
And especially when you've been doing it for as long as we have, you know, you do this for 17, 18 years.
Yeah.
This spans an entire generation. There's going to be people that like different things. And there's going to be people that say, I love what you're doing now, or I hate what you're doing now. And I don't know. I feel like I don't necessarily let that dictate what I choose to make. It's just like a gut feeling that you kind of go with.
Please, can you talk to Brandon about Hell of a Boss and how it's a change to his usual content with the more heartfelt scenes?
Yeah, well, I've always loved a lot of my long form stuff. My series has drama in it. And I always thought that humor and drama can be married a lot better than you see on a lot of primetime television shows. And Hell of a Boss is an extension of that belief. It's the fact that you have these characters that are at first perceived to be two-dimensional and outlandish and bombastic, but then as the episodes go on, you find that the problems they have are very real and adult and relatable to a lot of people, especially a lot of people who don't feel represented by a lot of mainstream media. You know, the show is very, it deals with problems that are a little bit more unique. And so these are stories I've been wanting to tell for a long time, but now we have the means to animate them and to make, you know, to do things that I could never do on my channel. Well, I can do in this world of Hell of a Boss because I'm allowed creative freedom and it's animation. So you can accept extras. Background people cost the same in both animation and in live action. They're a pain in the ass. Any scene with background people. Why am I talking about this?
there was a lot of positivity around Hell of a Boss in our comments. A lot of people were really liking the content.
It's, you know, I love it too. And I'm not just saying that because I'm part of the show. It's a show that normalizes a lot of queer struggles in a way that you don't feel like you're being spoon-fed a problem that you might not necessarily relate to. But I think a lot of people do relate to the problems and they don't have a lot of shows that have characters going through these struggles. And it's funny. You sprinkle, like, humor is the cheese of comedy. You can just sprinkle it on anything and it just goes down easier.
Hyper Baroque says, I assume Annoying Orange is the type of person who brings their own toothbrush and toothpaste and body wash when they visit someone's house, even if they don't expect to stay the night.
What the fuck?
Oh, boy, I don't even know what that means, really. But I will say, No, not if I'm not going to spend the night. No, definitely not.
Are you talking about the character or Dane?
Orange definitely wouldn't. He wouldn't care. He would just roll in and do his thing. Like,
I'm not going to lie. I brought my toothbrush and toothpaste. It's here.
To here.
So this should be an assumption
the wrong
for you.
Person.
I want to say if you do that, I do that too, so it's okay.
Oh. but then you learn that
then
Dane
I learned
doesn't
that that's
do
just
that.
Weird.
So you're like, me neither?
I would never do that. I never brush my teeth.
OG YouTubers have become worried about YouTube is becoming and that their content might get phased out.
I'm not dealing with that. I feel like maybe 5 or 6 years ago, there was that worry because things were shifting a lot and the algorithm started favoring and pushing longer and longer content. Mm-hmm. And when we're making stuff that's highly scripted and just in the manner that we do it, the content ends up being shorter. So it added that element of thinking, you know, especially with Smosh, we have other channels that can create longer content. So I feel safe in that regard that we're making the short content, we're making the long content. But I'm not necessarily worried about it now. I feel like YouTube has kind of gotten to a place where they're able to serve the content to the people that want to see what it is that you create.
Yeah, I would say it's a well-oiled machine right now. They are not paying me to, well, of course they're paying me. But it is, though, because we lived through adpocalypse. We lived through all these different eras of, like, you got to do this to get views. You got to do this to get
Even
views.
The introduction of the algorithm was a big shift. Yes. The 2013, 2014. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then there was classes, as if there was a set way to do it. And then we realized every year everything changes. And then it's like they're pushing long-form content, right? Yeah. Now they're pushing short-form.
Now it's shorts.
Now I can't make stuff short enough. That's, you know. And what I learned, really, is that we're all on tectonic plates. The rules are made up. Points aren't real. And it's just like, what has lasted the test of time, and I'm serious, what's going to get the most views? Nothing like that matters anymore, because it might not get, that might not be around next year. By the time you upload the video, the rules might be changed. Mm. So I feel like the stuff that is good on my channel has stood the test of time. Videos that I made in 2009, 2010, that were just like inherently good, that I put a lot of effort into, and you know, those have remained, you know, they still bring in new views today, but any video that at the time I was trying to make it to serve the algorithm, you can see that that's the driving force.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we do a pretty good job, I think, pivoting to, you know, kind of like talking about those big changes that happen. And that's kind of what we have to do as creators, is see, okay, well, this is how the platform's changing. This is what I got to do. Now, how can I make that work for me?
Yeah.
To make my audience happy as well.
Jammy Simps wants to know what it feels like to have created so many people's childhoods and passions.
Here it is. I was waiting for this one.
Okay.
They'll make you feel old question.
Okay.
But it's so genuine, though.
It
like,
is,
I don't know how many times I've uploaded, like, an old video or, you know, something like that, where it's, you know, redo an old video or put something up on Instagram, TikTok, whatever, and all the comments are like, this man was my childhood. And I'm like, as much as that makes you feel old, it's like, oh, that's
because that's a very
awesome.
Hard to reach place in a person
to
be able to like nestle into their child. Their childhood is such the nucleus of their soul. And like, if you have a place in that part of a person,
that's huge.
It is huge, because it's like, then you'll think about people that raised us, you know, on TV.
Yeah. Exactly. It's funny, because as a kid, those people that meant so much to me, for some reason, I felt like they knew it, or like they just expected it. But now, being on the opposite side of that, it's like, it surprises me every time, especially. It happens a lot in person. Even someone will be like, oh my God, you know, you made my childhood, or I watched you all the time. You were the common thing that me and my siblings could bond over. And I've even had people be like, I met my wife because we talked about and bonded over your videos.
Yeah, that's huge.
And that, it always catches me off guard, and I have no idea how to respond to it. I think there's a part of me that doesn't want to fully acknowledge it, because it's so much.
It's
heavy.
I had a woman emailed me, this was years ago, and she talked about how her husband had a terminal disease. The only thing that would make him laugh was watching Annoying Orange videos.
Wow.
And up until he passed away, like, that was the thing. Like, he just always wanted to watch Annoying Orange videos. Dude, I read that email and just bawled in front of the computer.
That's deep.
That's crazy. Like, you can't even imagine how your stuff touches people.
That's an assumption, actually. People think that it's more than just comedy, what we do. Because YouTube is so pocket-sized and so easy to pull out when someone's going through a crisis.
Yep.
Like, same with and I know you too, like, people turn to our videos in a different way than watching a TV show or going to the movies. It's quick laughs, and people can really use it for good when they're going through a hard time. It means just as much to me when I hear people say how they used comedy to avoid a bad situation or avoid or to make, you know, I had people come to me, they say, you raised me. And I always joke, I don't expect child support. fame does not equal fortune. But they're
no limos.
But no limos. Yeah. I did not get here in a limo. But there, it's very sweet, and especially when someone has the, like, when someone feels vulnerable enough to share that with you and open up, because not everyone does share those deep moments. And when I hear those, it's very powerful.
How do you feel when people say you're an OG YouTuber?
I feel like we got a VIP pass to one of the most exclusive spots in internet history.
Yeah, true. Wear that shit with pride.
Because not everyone can say that. People before us and people after, we hold a very sacred place in the timeline of the internet. And we were like the first wave of, I mean, there was MySpace celebrities and other like versions of internet, but we were like YouTube celebrities were like the first version of internet. And then you have like TikTokers and Instagram. But to be a YouTuber, that was a coveted coveted thing.
I kind of wear it as a badge of honor. I think it's really cool just to say that I was there since the beginning before you could even make money on this platform. And it really was just a place for expressing yourself and being creative and connecting with the community. And it's really cool to see how much it's grown. Mm-hmm. And to know that my heart is in it in the same way that it was then before money was involved, I think it's kind of cool to know that for sure.
That you have that longevity ahead of you. When I was a kid, I mean, if I knew that this was a career path, I wouldn't have done shit. I wouldn't have gotten anything. I wouldn't have done my homework. I would have just been like, I don't know how kids are still doing their algebra that this is a career path.
Because they know that they could be doing
this. This is an option. How are teachers getting any homework done? I think people, though, there is a misconception, though, or an assumption about they see where we are and they think, like, well, how do I just get there? And the way that, at least I feel like us, the way that we got where we are is very, very, you know, we got here in a very specific path.
I'd say we only got here because we didn't see this as a destination.
No, right. We were just playing.
Yeah.
In the sandbox.
Yeah. It's daunting, I think, when you look at someone who has reached a destination that you want to reach as well. It's daunting when you work backwards and look at all the little steps that it took to get there. You kind of want to skip a lot of those steps and just get there. Yeah. But I think all those little steps are required in order for you to get here. And you have to, for us, it started off with just playing and creating stuff that brought us joy. Mm-hmm. And it just so happened to resonate with people and bring them joy as well. And it was like one teeny tiny step each day.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.